You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern and 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA, LockedOnBulls.com, and college hoops over SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us your text, your voicemails. We're going to be doing mailbag today, so anybody that dropped us a voicemail, a text message, thanks for doing that. We have a ton to get to on today's show. So again, save this number in your phone as Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369. Whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, hit us up. We will be here for you all season long. Matt, welcome back. This was game four of five games on the West Coast. And man, this couldn't come to an end any faster for the Chicago Bulls team. The Bulls dropped this one to the Lakers 107-100 last night. The Bulls are on an 8-game losing streak. This losing streak is creeping closer to the longest losing streak since the rebuild started. I tweeted out last night that the longest losing streak since the rebuild started is 10 games, and that happened last season under Fred Hoiberg between November 19th and December 6th. That was 10 games, and it's looking like that's with the Nuggets coming up and then heading home and having to face the Heat this weekend. We could be looking at a 10-game losing streak before facing off against the Cavaliers and the Hawks early next week. But first and foremost, how you doing? Are you doing all right after that Lakers loss last night? And did you get some sleep at all?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, man, I will not miss these 9:30 tip-offs on this West Coast trip. Bulls Outsiders episode aired at like 1 a.m. last night. It was pretty brutal and not a game worth staying up for. So definitely a little groggy today. But as you said, we're at least on the home stretch of this five-game road trip. And at least we have an 8 o'clock tip-off in Denver as opposed to these 9 and 9:30s out on the West Coast. So I think the Bulls are going to be in for a very unfair fight in Denver tomorrow night. And, you know, we could talk about a little bit of what to expect in tomorrow's show there. But, I mean, they just got beat and beat good by the Warriors in, you know, a game of two of the West's best teams last night in a pretty entertaining game. So, you know that the Nuggets are going to be really ticked off about that and wanting to, you know, beat the snot out of a vastly inferior team when the Bulls come to town tomorrow night. So, that will be likely a 9 game losing streak after tomorrow night. And man, like, I saw this Lakers game as the one winnable game on this five-game West Coast trip, especially with the absence of LeBron. You were talking yesterday a little bit about how even without LeBron, their defense has been pretty strong over the first couple weeks of the new year. But even still, I mean, they lost to Cleveland a couple nights before this this Bulls game last night, and their team without LeBron just looks awful. So I thought that this was a winnable game for the Bulls last night, but the Bulls just kind of sleepwalked through the first three quarters or so while the game was even. Neither team was playing well. Neither team shot the ball well. Neither team managed to make a single shot outside the painted area in the entire first quarter. I don't even know how that's possible. And guess what? Another bad fourth quarter for the Bulls allowed the Lakers to pull away. And really, it was not as close as the 107-100 final. Like, the Bulls just kind of chipped away at the lead in a meaningless moments, final moments. And I guess moral victory, we prevented Lakers fans from getting free tacos. So there's your silver lining.
Yeah, the Lakers decided to go with Tyson Chandler and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as opposed to Josh Hart and JaVale McGee. Like, JaVale McGee and Josh Hart, you would assume, had been doing pretty well, and they were doing pretty decently when LeBron was in the rotation, and so Luke Walton needed to change some things up, especially after losing to the worst team in the league in the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that change, I don't know if it made any sort of difference. I mean, they did pull out the win last night, but I think that win can be coupled with the fact that Brandon Ingram went on a little bit of a hot streak here and there, especially in the second half. Lonzo Ball had a pretty decent third quarter that helped the Lakers find their streak. But look, I mean, I don't have much excuse for some of these guys. Like, the starting rotation played terrible for the Bulls. Chris Dunn had his worst game of the entire season, flat out. I mean, taking shots when guys are wide open going to the basket. There's clips all over Twitter right now. I mean, Chris Dunn grabs a basket, it's going in transition. Shaq Harrison, you can see, running straight to the basket, wide open, would have an easy layup. Chris Dunn doesn't hit him for an easy bucket. Instead, takes like a little 8-foot jumper and completely misses. He had a god awful night last night.
Yeah, he had more turnovers than assists, and they were bad turnovers. Like, they were really bad turnovers.
Very bizarre night from Chris Dunn. 2 for 7, 6 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 5 turnovers. And he was a minus 25 in the plus minus. Zach LaVine, also not a very good night. Although, not a very good night shooting. 4 for 11, 1 for 4 from 3, 10 points. He did have 8 assists. Something we haven't seen over the last few weeks is Zach LaVine stacking up assists. The only thing that kind of skews this is what's weird is Zach LaVine had, 7 assists after the first half. I think he racked up 5 or 6 of those in the second quarter, but then he didn't add to that. We came out in the second half and he only added 1 or 2 of those in the second half. So it's kind of minute at that point. It kind of X's it out when you don't add to that assist total in the second half. So I don't know. Lauri Markkanen, decent effort. I mean, 6 for 14, 17 points, 3 for 8 from 3, but 0 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, and only 3 rebounds. Not a really great night for Markkanen either. Carter was okay, 3 for 9, again, only 6 points, 10 rebounds. Bobby Portis was absolutely god-awful off the bench, 1 for 11, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, and only 2 points. The only person that actually played halfway decent is Jabari Parker, who's going on his trade value showcase. So that's the only person who played halfway damn decent last night at 7 for 10 and 18 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. So that's all I have to say about that Lakers game last night. That first half might have been the worst first half of basketball I've seen all year long. From both sides. From both sides.
It was disgusting. Especially that first quarter, which I mentioned. I mean, I think the team started 0 of 18 from downtown or something like that. Like, insanely bad. 18 to 19 was the first quarter score. In today's NBA, you were looking across the scoreboards across the league last night as, you know, all of the normal tip-off times, Midwest and East Coast, were coming to a close as Bulls-Lakers was getting started. And they were all, you know, winning teams putting up somewhere between 125, 145 points, and all these crazy high-scoring games. We've seen it across the league all season long. And here are the Lakers and the Bulls, two just laughingly bad teams, struggling to put the ball in the basket at any place, in any place and time. It was painful to watch. We've talked about the way that this Bulls team has sputtered under Jim Boylan, in his successor role to Fred Hoiberg, and how frustrating it's been offensively. And you, I mean, you said it, the starting five for the Bulls, the core four for the Bulls, it was just ugly last night. Nothing was working. And I mean, to play that poorly against a Lakers team that is just aimless right now while they wait for LeBron to come back, it's really inexcusable. It's like, I mean, I was sitting there watching that game last night being like, why the hell am I watching this crap? Why do we do this to ourselves? It was so ugly. Bad basketball going back and forth on both ends. And it's just like, what, you know, for the love of God, we're trying to talk about the silver linings and optimism of believing in the young core that this team has assembled. And we're worried about Markkanen and his kind of stagnating second season. We're worried about Chris Dunn and the bad mental mistakes he makes. We're worried about the dud games from Zach LaVine and all these things. And it's like, where is the optimism? Some nights it's hard to find where the optimism is with this crew. And last night was a perfect example of that. There have been a lot of tough games to watch this season. I don't know if there are any games that were harder to watch. Because guess what? You expect to get blown out by the Warriors. You expect to get blown out by the top-tier teams in this league, because this Bulls team is young, inexperienced, and straight up not very talented right now. But to have that kind of effort against that pathetic Lakers group, it's embarrassing.
And look, some people who didn't watch the game last night might say, hey, I mean, they only lost by seven, so like, I don't get what you guys are griping about so much.
No.
Like, look, yes, they only lost by seven, but you're talking about a game that Jabari Parker basically kept them in. Jabari kept them in this game. Had Jabari not come off the bench and scored 18 points, the Bulls lose this game by 20.
Yeah.
Simple fact.
That's true. Jabari was the only player that had a decent night last night, for the Bulls anyway. And you know, coming from someone who's, we all know how I feel about Jabari, give credit to the guy. He's gone through a lot this season, coming in and out of the rotation. Boylan called on him again, even though Bobby Portis was back last night. And Jabari was the only competent player on the floor last night. And it's, you know, that leads to a whole different conversation about the laughing stock that this team has become with the Jabari Parker situation and how they've handled it, or lack thereof handling it. But it's, you know, it even like Jabari coming in and saying, well, at least Jabari played well last night, you can immediately turn that on his head and say, God, what the hell is this team doing? What the hell is this team doing? Because the only guy who had a halfway decent game last night is your $20 million free agent signing, who has been a DNP coach's decision for the better part of the last month and a half because of some Boylan-esque reasons. And maybe they're trying to trade him, but maybe they aren't because they don't want to take on much. Like, the whole situation is a flipping mess, which is why 35 or so games left. For the love of God, all we want right now is as many losses as possible to give us that equal top-tier percent chance, 14% chance of landing Zion Williamson, and maybe trying to figure out what to do in year three of a rebuild, hopefully with a different coach, because this Boylan shit is stupid.
It really is. I can't sum it up any better than that. It's stupid. It really is at this point. Like, man, I can't explain it. It's game 44, and we're still getting shot clock violations in handfuls.
Yeah.
Like, how do you explain that? Like, it's embarrassing, man. Your young players should not be doing this. Those are the little things that are adding up, and it's these guys don't even know how to run offensive sets. Like, they're running into each other on the offensive side of the ball. Most guys don't even know where they need to be on the defensive side of the ball. Like, It's just embarrassing.
Yeah. Like, how many times last night were we forced to watch Shaq Harrison jack up a three because the shot clock was running down? And guess what?
Right.
I'm pretty sure Robin Lopez has a better three-point percentage this season than Shaq Harrison does. The dude can't shoot. And yet, multiple times last night, we were like, oh, here's, like, we just have to watch somebody jack up a bad shot because the shot clock is all of a sudden gone. Because guess what? Jim Boylan wants to slow things down, and none of his offensive sets are working outside of the occasional Robin Lopez post-up. And guess what? Rolo's out of the rotation now because he wants to play Bobby at the backup five so that we can now put Jabari back in to get minutes at the backup four, because maybe we're trying to trade both of those guys, but we don't really know what's going on. It's chaos on the court and it's chaos off the court. And you saw that really summed up succinctly in that game last night.
Another quick thing real fast is we saw Shaq Harrison last night, but Wayne Selden played really well against Utah, and then we didn't see him in the first half at all.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? Like, how do you come off a performance of the one that Wayne Selden had, where he went 5 for 7, actually looked like he had a clue about what he was doing with the second unit, and then you just decide not to play him in the entire first half.
Well, it's,
and then wait, Jim Boylan's going to make a second half adjustment and then play Wayne Selden at the expense of Chandler Hutchison, who actually had a pretty decent game. Like, if we're going to talk about anybody, like, Chandler Hutchison
had a great start.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get that. I really don't.
So that was another thing that I just didn't understand, and it's on a long list of other things that I really don't understand about this Bulls team. And look, all of this is magnified by the fact that the Bulls are on an 8-game losing streak, and all of this is just adding up. And every game that the Bulls continue to lose on this losing streak is going to continue to blow up even more. And the list of negatives are just going to continue to keep getting longer and longer the more that the Bulls lose. And the more that the Bulls lose consecutively, the bigger the problem's going to become. So, I mean, I get it from the quotes that Chris Dunn is talking about how losing is draining and being at the bottom of the NBA is draining. But you know what? At the same time, we can blame Boylan all we want, but I got to say something to the players too. They've got to be held accountable in part of this too. Go out there and prove something, then, man. Like, I'm sorry. I'm cool with holding Boylan accountable for most of this and for running all the sets too. But man, show me something. Prove something instead of complaining at some point. Like, you're on an 8-game losing streak. I get it, it's draining, but show us something. Because what you're showing right now is an 8-game losing streak and the embarrassment of the NBA. So I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it too, and I know a lot of Bulls fans are too. And like, look, a lot of it can be stemmed back to Boylan too, but part of it falls on the players too. Like, when you go 1 for 11 like Portis did, like, man, I can't feel bad for you. At some point, that's not on Boylan. On some point, that's not on Boylan for you shooting 1 for 11. Chris Dunn, at some point, it's not on Boylan. You missed your open man for an easy bucket.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's blame. There's plenty of blame to go around. And you're right. It's not all on Boylan. These young players have to play better. But I think the main concern that a lot of Bulls fans have right now watching, we're more than a month into the Boylan experiment now, is that, is the young core's lack of development, when we're talking about Markkanen not being aggressive enough, Markkanen having games where he ghosts for a couple of quarters, LaVine ghosting, done with these really head-scratching failures to run the offense at times, Wendell with all the foul trouble he gets into and not looking to be aggressive on the offensive end, how much of that is them trying and failing to play an outdated system that Boylan is forcing them to run, and how much of it is a shortcoming in talent and readiness and NBA maturation of the young players themselves? Because I think it's a combination of both, but I am really concerned that Boylan is holding them back, and Boylan is not doing the development of these young players any favors, which is why, look, we said we were going to give Boylan some time to evaluate whether or not he was a good replacement for Fred and if he's the guy moving forward. But I don't know about you, Jordan. I'm done. I am done with Boylan. I think it is clear that this guy is in way over his head. You could talk about him being a quality assistant coach at the NBA level for years. Fine. You could talk about Paxson putting him in place to be a more, tough-nosed, gritty coach to eliminate some of these bad habits that we kept hearing about and whip these kids into shape and really get them to buy into a more disciplined style of being NBA players. You could talk about that till the cows come home. But if Boylan is outdated and outgunned when it comes to preparing for an NBA opponent on a nightly basis and actually helping these young players develop, then what the fuck are we doing with this guy as our head coach? And right now, that's what it looks like.
I agree. No, that's a good point. It's a good point. How much of this is holding some of these young players back? Because you see some of the regression that Markkanen's taking. And while looking at the stats may say that Chris Dunn's numbers are up in maybe every shooting category, it doesn't look like that when you look at it, the totality of the entire team. And maybe some of the numbers are up for Zach LaVine, but when you watch them as a collective unit, it doesn't look the same. So there is a point to be made, and I think that is truthful too. I agree, Matt. I'm like 98% out on Boylan. Like, at this point, I just don't understand how you can get any better from here. And I don't know what the players feel. And I'm assuming that they feel the same way. Like, they're probably thinking to themselves, too, like, what the hell are we doing, man? Let's get off the Lakers loss, and let's get to some of your text messages and voicemails. But before we do that, let's get to a short break. We back here on Locked On Bulls in 60 seconds. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up, 331-979-1369 on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, on Instagram, same place, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, all of those places. Drop us your voicemails, your text messages, your tweets, your messages, any of those places. Drop us all of your questions, your voicemails, your tweets, anything you got for us, all of those places, social media or a text and voicemail line. All right, let's get right into it. This one's from the 724. This one's from Ken. Hey, it's Ken, Bulls fans for life here in Pittsburgh. Just want to say, love the show and glad I found somewhere I can get Bulls news every single day. Thanks for listening. Was just wondering if the Bulls are like the Pittsburgh Pirates at all. All we ever do is get rid of good players, and the ownership keeps saying they're doing it their best for the team, but not putting good baseball on the field. Just wondering if that's the same thing with the Bulls. They don't want to spend any money and just put a team out there that makes sense. Does this make sense at all? Again, love the show. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks. So, Matt, the only thing that I connected here is the way that some Bulls fans say that, you know, with the Bulls being in the third largest market in the country and operating as if they live in a small market, at times it's like the White Sox in a large market but act like they are a small market team. And to some credit, they sort of do, but they have the money to do this. They have the money to go out and spend. They just can't land the free agents. They can't spend the money. And at times they do act like that they are cheap. So I don't know a whole ton about the Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't spend my time watching the Pittsburgh Pirates at all, but I can see some type of relevance here of why you would make that connection, why you would be frustrated. I think about the Pirates being in the playoffs and making their playoff appearance in the wild card and making some moves to try to get there and then selling off their entire team not even a year later. So I can kind of understand the connection he's making.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a wealth of knowledge about the ownership and operations of the Pittsburgh Pirates, but based on the parallels Ken's making here, I think he's got somewhat of a valid point. The thing about getting all we do is get rid of good players, I don't know if Ken is referring to like trading away Derrick Rose or trading away Jimmy Butler, or something else, or even something as simple as like Spencer Dinwiddie, who a lot of Bulls fans are missing and wishing that we had back, the way that he blossomed with the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, the thing about money, right? The Bulls don't want to spend money. Obviously, there are plenty of examples of that as far as the penny pinching and just the recent MCW trade they made so they could put an extra $700,000 in their pocket, or the cash considerations trade on draft night a couple years ago so that they could use that money to deal with Rondo's buyout and all that kind of stuff. Like, clearly there is a significant portion of the fan base who believes the front office and ownership value money over good players and actually putting a winning product on the floor. That is a reality that we've been living in for several years now, as far as what the fan base feels towards ownership. At the same time, they always preach to us about financial flexibility, and we want to be able to have the opportunity to go out and get those, you know, those top tier guys. And, you know, they pat themselves on the back still for being disciplined in the summer spending spree in 2016. And they patted themselves on the back for the Wade and the Rondo and now the Jabari signings for all being short-term money commitments. And then, look, I don't think it's about them not wanting to spend money. I think it's about the fact that they can't get anybody to come here. Like, they gave Jabari Jabari $20 million bidding against themselves because they couldn't really interest anyone else in coming to play here. And it's very much so a connection between top-tier players in this league not trusting what's going on here and looking at what's going on here and looking at the chaos that this Bulls franchise has become and looking at the way that they've treated some of the best players that have come through this organization in recent years and saying, I want no part of that. There's something to be said for that.
Here's my Pirates connection really fast for you. Pirates to Bulls connection really fast. So the Pirates technically really just built around Andrew McCutchen, right? Andrew McCutchen became their star. Jimmy Butler, in same sense, Derrick Rose got hurt. The Bulls were kind of trying to move on from Derrick Rose. Jimmy Butler was really going to become the star here. Fans wanted them to build around him. Perfect. All the Bulls could really get to was 8th or 7th seed, right? Same thing with the Pirates. All they could do was get to a wild card. And they tried to bring in pieces to get them over the hump. Same thing with the Bulls. Bulls brought in Pau Gasol to do that. Pirates had Gerrit Cole. They brought in other small pieces to try to get them over that hump. Couldn't do it. And after all that time, what did they do? They went and they traded Andrew McCutchen. Bulls, what did they do? They went and traded Jimmy Butler. So for all of that, they tried to build around their star, their guy, their one guy, and the guy that was through and through for their city didn't want to leave. Ultimately, they couldn't do that, and they didn't have enough pieces to try and sell people on coming to their team. And look, that's an indictment on the Bulls for the fact that they're in a huge market with a brand the size of the Chicago Bulls. And I'm sorry to say, but it's the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're in a smaller market, and it's the Pirates. So there's my Bulls to Pirates connection that I can make for our texter Ken. So over the last few years.
Yeah. Sorry that Ken is dealing with that for two teams' fan bases. That's got to be rough.
I know you're not that sorry because you're a Cubs fan. So
hey, some things in life are still okay. Although it sounds like the Cubs are out on Bryce and we're never in on Bryce. So I'm still dealing with that bummer news from yesterday.
Yeah, you get out of here. You and your Cubs fans thinking you guys are going to sign somebody big. Get out of here. You guys got more issues than signing a big-time free agent. So anyway, let's get on to another text message here. This one is from Walt from the 219. Just being a little pessimistic here. Hey, that's not the first time we've heard this on the show. Neither Matt or I are never pessimistic. But in the scenario, we don't get the first or the second pick in the draft. Who are some interesting options outside of the top five? Okay, so if we don't get the first or the second pick, let's just, for the sake, let's say we don't get the top three, so that wouldn't include any of the Duke kids. So Zion, RJ Barrett, or Cam Reddish. Also, the Bulls have been healthy as of late, and we are still stacking up losses. Are you guys starting to be a little bit concerned that our young core isn't as good as we thought? Will this be the final rebuild of Gar Packs if they fail? That third question, I don't think you or I can answer, so we'll just kind of ignore that for now. But I think that second question, are you guys starting to be a little bit concerned that our young core isn't as good as we thought, is a very good one and is a very valid one. Matt, what say you?
Yeah, well, so I think the situation we're in now is that the top, you know, the national agreement or consensus of the top three has changed. Cam Reddish was an interesting name as part of that Duke trio to start the season, but he has not looked good. I know he's fallen down my board at least, three or four spots, and I think he has for a lot of people. And you've also gotten some other interesting names rising. Morant, the kid from Murray State, who had that facial dunk a couple nights ago and has really put together a strong collection of games recently. He looks awesome. And because the Bulls are still really wishy-washy on Chris Dunn, and I know a lot of Bulls fans are wishy-washy on Dunn, that would be a very interesting one if he doesn't, in fact, all of a sudden find himself in the top two or three. And as our texter is asking us, if the Bulls fall out of the first or second pick, they might lose out on him now. You know, there are a few other names, you know, Kevin Porter, who now is kind of a more unknowable quality because of the way his season is being interrupted now. Texas Tech's Jared Culver is another interesting name that's kind of rising on people's draft boards. So, like, it always flexes and it always changes. But the one thing that we know for certain is that in this 2019 draft, it's not very deep, and it's Zion and it's everybody else. So maybe the Bulls get themselves a decent player who's a piece who can be an NBA player. But as far as getting a franchise-changing talent this year, this time around, that's why it's so important for the Bulls to maximize those odds and finish with a top three worst record so that they have 14% chance of getting that number one spot so that they can take Zion. Nothing else
matters.
Let me
throw an idea out there really fast for you, because you know how I like to take it to the next level. Let me back it up really fast. Sorry, I'm going all over the place. But speaking of Ja Morant really quick, the kid can jump out of the gym, man. Like I said, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I needed somebody smarter than me to tell me if he's for real or not. But he played with Zion Williamson, actually, with the USA team. And those two, if you go back and look at their film together, holy shit, man. Like, putting those two together is just absolutely ridiculous. But on top of that, man, I'm very, very skeptical about taking kids who play in the Ohio Valley Conference. Like, that would be the one thing that bothers me a little bit, is the competition level he's playing against. He goes to Murray State. He's playing against schools like Belmont, Tennessee Tech, Morehead State, Eastern Kentucky, Eastern Illinois, SIU. So that would be my only worry. If they get into the tournament, if they start playing better teams, that would be where I need to see the competition level rise. And that may not happen at the end of the season, but we'll find out in the next couple of months. That would be my only concern level with him. As far as what you were saying about the draft level as a whole, yeah, I think it's a one or two player league, and then everybody else. Really, outside of every other draft, I think this is a very, very top heavy draft. Zion and RJ Barrett and then everybody else. And really, I think it's just Zion and everybody else. With that said, though, if the Bulls fall out, if this is this texter is right, if the Bulls fall out of the top five, or even if they fall out of the top three, I think you seriously have to consider, if there are stars available on the trade market this summer, you seriously have to consider packaging that first round pick and seeing if there's a star on the market to trade for, and packaging that first round pick. I think it would be worth it to have the conversation to do that. I don't know who would be available and what's going to come about in the next 6 months, but I think that's a conversation you need to have. If there isn't a franchise changer there, I think there's pieces on this Bulls team to accompany that first round pick that you can put together a pretty good package to entice a team that's looking to go in another direction, similar to what the Bulls were doing a few years back. So that would be my pitch.
I mean, I can see that, but I mean, I think if there's anything we've commended the Bulls for in the last couple of years, is that they haven't gotten too cute with their draft picks. I think everybody was there were some questioning Markkanen, and you know, some people were up in arms saying, I can't believe we took him over DSJ. And you know, now look, you know, the Mavs have Luka and they see DSJ as expendable. But and then Wendell, I think a lot of people, as much as this team desperately needed a wing, I think most people are glad seeing the potential ceiling in the 19-year-old kid Wendell that we've seen so far this season, his rookie season. Like, don't worry about fit. So the wings that were in that 2018 draft class, none of them were worth taking, you know, at seven, and Wendell was. So don't overthink things. As far as what they're going to do coming into this 2019 draft, again, it depends on how the ping pong balls fall. But my advice would be, don't get too cute. Obviously, Zion is the top prize. If you don't find yourself with the number one pick, obviously, unless something crazy happens, Zion will be gone and off the board. So take the best talent that you see. And it might be It might be Ja Morant. Like, it could be at that point that he's number two, and maybe the Bulls are sitting in there too. But, you know, anyway you dice it, just don't get cute. This Bulls team still needs a lot of talent and help. So we just have to cross our fingers and pray that this team's scouting unit, which we have a lot of questions about, you know, heck, they tried to make moves to get Campaign on draft night and then went out and traded for him a year later. There are questions about the Bulls scouting team and whether or not they are competent. They have hit on Markkanen and Wendell, I believe, and we just have to hope that if they don't get Zion, they find something and someone useful to add to this rebuild.
So what you're saying is, I guess, is when you mean don't get cute is don't think you have to panic if they fall to 5, 6, 7. If that is the case this summer, don't think that they have to trade down or trade out of the draft for something else.
Certainly, I would not trade down unless some crazy opportunity presents itself. And this is, I feel like, you know, deja vu. We talked about this last year,
yeah,
where the Bulls were at 7, and can we try and trade up? You know, that was a big talking point between you and I. I said, you know, it'd be great. It's not going to happen. Now, boy, wouldn't we wish we could go back in time and figure out a way for the Bulls to do anything they could to trade up to get Luka. Or, hey, if a coin flip goes another way, they could have taken Luka at 2 instead of Sacramento having the second pick.
But don't remind me.
I'm just saying, you know, I don't see it likely, given how shallow this draft class is, that anybody who lands in that top 3 is going to be willing to trade down. Unless one of the teams that lands in the top 3, if it's not the Bulls, you know, two and or three say, man, we really wanted Zion, and we're not really that high on anybody else on the board, so much so that we're willing to trade out of 2 or 3. But to me, if the Bulls find themselves out of that top 3, and clearly there's nothing they can do to trade up to 1 to get Zion, that's not happening. I don't see anybody else at the moment. Again, a lot of college basketball left to be played. I don't see anybody at the moment worth trading up for at the 2 or 3 spot should the Bulls fall outside of that.
All right, next question comes from the 917. It's a link to an article talking about possible trade scenarios for Dennis Smith Jr., and it lists the Bulls. And it's a straight swap for Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn for Dennis Smith Jr. This one's from the 917. Says, is this a realistic option for the Bulls? Matt, this was a hot topic among Bulls Twitter, among Bulls fans yesterday. What do you think about this? Because I'll tell you right now, I'm out on swapping Dennis Smith for Chris Dunn. I'll tell you why, yeah, but I want to hear your thoughts.
It seems like it's been
a
hot topic for Bulls fans recently, just because we've heard that the Mavs are at least interested in floating or DSJ out there to see what they can get for him. I don't know, maybe they're just kind of down on him after everybody... Remember DSJ Summer League version? Like, right after they drafted him, and everybody was like, oh my God, this kid's going to end up being the best player from this draft class. Well, you know, he's certainly showed that was a bit too much and a bit too exciting and initial, knee-jerk reaction. And now that they have this, you know, this phenom Luka kind of running their offense, maybe they see DSJ as expendable. I do kind of like the idea of picturing DSJ running a more up-tempo, free-for-all offense with the likes of LaVine and Markkanen. I like it a lot. And after a game like the one Chris Dunn had, man, like I'm trying, and I've been trying, to stick to my guns that we just need to see Chris Dunn stay healthy and to put a string of solid games under his belt. Put half a season of healthy, solid play under his belt, and we might change our tune on whether or not Dunn can actually be a legit starting point guard in this league and for our Bulls. But it's getting harder and harder to stick to that belief based on what we see from Chris Dunn. So in this hypothetical Dunn for DSJ swap, I mean, I don't know. DSJ's younger. He's, I guess, more of an unknown with maybe a higher ceiling at this point. But I, you know, if I'm the Bulls, I'm not like bending over backwards to make that deal happen.
I agree with you too. And this is what I will say about Dennis Smith Jr. I liked him when he was coming out of the draft too. The only thing I've kind of soured on him a little bit, and the fact too is the fit here with the Bulls. If Zach LaVine is going to stay here long term, like, I don't understand how Bulls fans could want the idea of pairing him next to Zach LaVine. Like, how could you want that? Dennis Smith Jr. isn't a good defender. Go look at his numbers. They're not good. He's slightly better than Zach LaVine, and that's not a compliment, because Zach LaVine is one of the worst defenders in the NBA. It's not a secret. Dennis Smith Jr.'s defensive numbers over the last 2 years, last year he was a negative 0.7 defensive box plus minus player. An average player in the NBA is a zero. He was a negative 0.7, so he was slightly below average. This year, he's a negative 0.1, so slightly better. But that's also taking into account the team that you're playing with. His defensive rating last year was a 110. This year, it was a 110. So his defense isn't good. And the other thing I will say, too, is his assist-to-turnover ratio isn't great either. It's up from last year. He was averaging 2.8 turnovers last year. He's averaging 3.1 this year. His assists last year were 5.2. This year, 3.9. His field goal percentage last year was 39.5. This year, 44.3. But he's taking 4.8 less shots this year and only making less than one less this year. So if you look at the numbers and you actually break it down, the field goal percentages that he's making may look to the eye test as they're better, but he's actually not making that many more field goals this year or that many less this year. So while the averages are up, the shots that are going in aren't up. So what I'm telling you here is what I think of Dennis Smith Jr. is basically what you have in Zach LaVine, but 3 years younger and slightly a better defender than Zach LaVine is, but not nearly the offensive player that Zach LaVine is. And hey, he might be a better distributor. He might have a higher ceiling than Zach LaVine may ever have, and we may see what Zach LaVine is, and that might be who he is for the rest of his career, and Dennis Smith Jr. may blow that out in only his first two seasons. Like, that could be the case, but I don't understand how Bulls fan could want to pair Dennis Smith Jr. next to Zach LaVine and think that could work. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure I'm with you on that one.
And that's not an indictment on Dennis Smith Jr. either. Like,
no.
I think he can be a nice player in a good system, but I don't see it next to Zach LaVine. That fit would just be terrible. Like, you want to see bad defense? Put him next to Zach LaVine.
Right, which is why, as much as we've been frustrated with Dunn offensively, we know that he's doing everything he can to mask the defensive deficiencies of this team right now, in particular his backcourt mate, Zach LaVine.
Right. So, and look, hey, remember too, Dennis Smith Jr. had an ACL tear in high school, and he was part of that population of humans. 20% of humans have an extra ligament in their knee, and he was part of that. That's why his recovery kind of went under the radar in high school, and his recovery time was only like 2 to 3 months, and he was dunking after like 2 weeks after his surgery. So it saved him there. But look, I'm out on another guy that had an ACL tear. I don't want to be the Chicago ACLs. I'm out. Sorry. He might be a great player, but I don't need that. I don't need that stress in my life anymore. So I'm done. I'm out on that. So thanks. And look, I think the Mavericks probably will have better offers than a straight swap for Chris Dunn. And look, I don't think Chris Dunn necessarily fits great next to Luka either.
No, I mean, he's... I think we're going to keep getting these questions and texts and comments on Bulls Twitter about DSJ. I'm not sold. I'm really not sold on it. I think that the hype around him when he crashed onto the summer league scene was interesting and a fun story at the time, but I think there are serious limitations to his game, and I am with you also. And it's one of the big reasons why I was freaking waving my arms around and screaming, no, for the love of God, no, about Jabari. It's like, dude, this team has been so snake-bitten trying to play with players and get over players dealing with ACLs. Like, can we not add another one to the list, please?
All right, from the 773. Hey, first-time texter, Brandon from 773, love the podcast. I'm throwing in the towel for the Bulls for the next 4 years or more after hearing Boylan got a two-year extension. His style of basketball sucks and is boring, and he hasn't improved the team.
Stop. Hey, Brandon, educate yourself. Boylan didn't get an extension. We went over this yesterday or Monday, whenever that was. Didn't get an extension. You want to give up on the team? Fine. Educate yourself first.
No fault of Brandon. There are people around the media that have been falsely putting this out, too, that he got an extension. And actually to ESPN's headline, too, which to their fault, they put it on their headline that he got an extension, which is false and clickbaity, too. Which, I mean, shot fired to ESPN, but that's not fair to Bulls fans to mislead them like that, too, because he didn't get an extension. But, okay, Bulls fans were misled, too, the ones that weren't really paying attention. I don't know if Brandon was or not, but yes, he did not get an extension, so don't freak out. So here's the rest of the text. His style of basketball sucks and is boring, and he hasn't improved the team since firing Horberg. Okay, don't be surprised when Markkanen declines his extension and tests the market and leaves, and LaVine asks for a trade in the next 2 years. I mean, man, I don't know about all of that. That would be absolute worst case scenario. Like, a lot of shit would have to go wrong. I mean, I know it feels like that right now, and that's a shitty take to have, and I know it can feel like that right now, but a lot of stuff has to go wrong in the next 2 years to be at that point. I hope it doesn't get to that, but I don't think it's going to get that bad. I really don't. I think Markkanen needs to still prove something, and I think we need to wait and see. I think that's looking at the glass half empty, and I know it's hard to do that when the Bulls are on an 8-game losing streak and you have a coach that's brought back an offensive style from the 90s, but I think we're getting too far ahead of ourselves here at this point with yes. a take like that.
I mean, for the love of God, this team has enough to worry about right now. Here and now, what's going on with this rebuild? How can we make it better? How can we fix it? I understand that some Bulls fans are already starting to worry about, LaVine hates Boylan. He might demand a trade. Markkanen might leave when we sign. I think I said this on a recent episode, Jordan. This is a players' league. And do not worry, Brandon, or anyone else who feels like Brandon, that Boylan might cost us players. Because guess what? The whole player mutiny thing, and Boylan's the boss, and Boylan's ruling with an iron fist, and Paxton says he wants him to rule an iron fist. No, it's a players' league. LaVine might be the guy who gets Boylan fired because they don't get along, and LaVine wants to do what he does offensively, and Boylan is, you know, holding him back with a very short leash. That is still very much a possibility. Markkanen walking away in free agency? Please, can we not worry Agreed. About that yet? I understand where the line of thinking comes from. But please, let's, you know, here and now, people.
Let's worry about the draft coming up in the summer, like that far ahead. And let's worry about 2019 free agency, like if we're going to get that far ahead before we even get to that point. All right, let's move the train along here in the last 10 minutes or so. What does the Bulls record need to be the rest of the way for Jim Boylan not to be retained? This is from the 630, Matt. I don't think it really matters about their record going forward, to be completely honest with you. I think it's going to matter about the way that the young players are responding to him, more so than anything else, and the way that they're looking on the floor, regardless of the wins or the losses. Because look, you tell me last night, how did that look? A 7-point loss looked like a 40-point loss last night, the way that the Bulls played. Like, to me, that looked just as bad as the Warriors loss,
yeah.
just as bad as Boston loss, like just as bad as Orlando's loss. So to me, it doesn't matter about the wins and the losses or how bad you got beat. It matters about the way that they're playing and how these guys are developing in the next 38 games that the Bulls have. So wins and losses, I don't think, is going to necessarily be the sticking factor on whether or not Boylan's retained this summer.
Yeah, record will have nothing to do with it. Just like they told us that win-loss record would have nothing to do with their evaluation of Fred Hoiberg. And they kicked him to the curb. Yeah, the Bulls had a really ugly start to the season, but people were saying, you know, why now? Why now? The Bulls are about to finally start getting some of their main core guys back, their healthy pieces back, and now you fire Fred? It tells you it was not necessarily about the record. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't about that with Fred, so it's not going to be about that with Boylan. And I hope, for the love of God, I feel like I've said that phrase a lot on today's show. Well, that's where we are right here and now with our Bulls, that the Bulls front office and ownership take a look at what Jim Boylan has done to this young core. And not just the, oh, he works them too hard, or he, you know, demoralizes them or belittles them, but actually on the court, what he is doing to prevent the development of these young players and say, well, this can't be it. This ain't it, Chief, as the young kids say these days. Boylan ain't it, Chief. I hope that the Bulls brass recognizes that and says, look, if we have to pay three coaches next season, we have to pay three coaches, but Boylan ain't it, and it has nothing to do with wins and losses.
I'm with you again. I'm with you 100% there. So, I mean, if the train continues to go the way it is, the Bulls are going to have to seriously reevaluate what they're doing here. Like, as much as Paxson and Boylan might have this connection, and Boylan might just be an extension of what Paxson really wants to do and is double, tripling, quadrupling down on everything, like, we'll find out after these 38 games and going into the offseason. And, you know, there might be some traction, too, and we can dive into this in the next few months, too, is how many of these moves are not just Boylan, but it's an extension of the front office, too. And that's something else we can get into for another time.
But, and, I mean, just look at, think about this. They fired Fred because they had a really rough start. What were they, like 3-20 or 4-, you know, 5-20, whatever, when they fired him? And with a healthier, supposedly more talented roster, if we are going to assume that things like getting Markkanen back, getting Dunn back, getting Bobby Portis back are things that make this Bulls team should make this Bulls team more competitive. And you look at some of the blowout losses the Bulls have suffered under Boylan. You look at some of the pathetic displays that we have had under Boylan, like the Lakers game last night. You can sit here and say, okay, Fred didn't do a great job to start this season. Got off to a rough start, but hey, he was dealt a pretty shitty hand once again. Boylan has a healthier, better, more talented roster, and the Bulls are still getting blown out and losing lots of games. So, by the transitive property, even this Bulls front office, who we don't give a lot of credit to and don't see as being, oh, I don't know, very observant or intelligent or, you know, pick your adjective, should be able to see that Boylan is doing less and doing worse with more than what Fred Hoiberg was doing. So I don't give a damn about Paxson and Boylan talking about, oh, you know, it's spirit and it's honoring the game and it's hustle and it's win sprints and we got to eliminate the bad habit. No, if you are putting forth a worse form of basketball consistently with a healthier version of your core of young players, then something with the coach is wrong. And so in that sense, wins, losses, yeah, it does have something to do with it. But it's all about evaluating the fact that Boylan is doing less with more. It's simple. It's not that complicated.
I agree, and Hoiberg doesn't have one of the worst franchise losses in Bulls history on his record either, and two of the worst defensive rating losses in NBA history on his record. He has one of them, but not two of them. Like, we could stack it all up, and I don't feel like doing that right now at the end of the episode. All right, let's get to another text message here. This is more positive, Matt. Let's put a positive spin on a question, and I think we can do that with this one. This is from the 708. Hey, guys. So last year, it was no surprise to anyone in Bulls Nation that Lowry made the NBA All-Rookie Team. My question, do you guys believe Wendell will make it this year's All-Rookie Team? I'd love to see Wendell make it, and I believe he deserves it. He's been able to hang with the other bigs in the league. What do you guys think? Matt, what are your thoughts looking around the rookie class so far? We're over the halfway points through the season, 38 games left. As much as we've talked about some of the struggles of Wendell Carter Jr.'s season this year, I mean, looking at the rookie class, he's still stacked up pretty well in a lot of the different categories, as much as we've talked about his struggles.
Yeah, I think the depth of the bigs in his draft class might work to his disadvantage. There is, you know, they do first team and second team for NBA All Rookie. Lowry made first. I'm saying Wendell's not going to be NBA All Rookie first team. I'd say he has an outside shot of being All Rookie second team. But again, I mean, you talk about Wendell being the last of a bunch of lottery bigs. You had obviously Ayton going one, Bagley going two. You had Jaren Jackson going ahead of Wendell. You had Mo Bamba going ahead of Wendell. You know, other than Mo Bamba, who's been kind of a meh so far his rookie season, as much as everybody was falling in love with his wingspan and his his physical traits, it's, you know, you talk about DeAndre and Bagley and Jaren Jackson Jr. I think that makes it hard for Wendell to say he's a lock for an all rookie spot right now.
Yeah, I think all rookie second team is probably a good slot for him. You mentioned Mo Bamba really quick too. Let's not forget that he's playing behind an all-star in Vucevic too. Like, Vucevic is having a career year right now and he is dominating. Like, Mo Bamba's only played 16 minutes a game too, so there's a lot of time for Mo Bamba to develop still. But you're right. Like, DeAndre Ayton's having quite the year, 16.6 per game, 10.6 rebounds. He's averaging a double-double this year. Jaren Jackson Jr. looks phenomenal this year too. Marvin Bagley has picked it up in only 23 minutes, 12.4 points per game, 6.4 rebounds. But look, Wendell Carter Jr. among rookies is eighth in points, second in rebounds per game. He is, let's see, he's 12th in assists. He's top five in blocks. Among field goal percentage, he's in the top 10. So there is definitely a case. Like, if you look across the numbers, he's in top 10 in almost every category. In some categories, he's top five. So yes, I think all rookie second team is definitely something we can consider. And if you consider too the team that he's playing on and having to start from day one, and the team that he played with too, I think all of those factors considered, definitely all rookie second team for Wendell would be a huge accomplishment for him too. And I think that would be awesome for him, especially the slot that he was taken at too. So that would be huge props. And I don't know when they are going to announce this for the All-Star game. I would assume in the next couple of days, Matt. Just looking back at my timeline that I created for the Bulls rebuild, it was announced about Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen last year right around this time for the Futures game for the All-Star team. That Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn were going to play in that. I would assume that sometime this week we're going to hear about who's going to be named to that game. I would assume Wendell Carter Jr. is going to be on that team. So look out for that announcement too. So that's something to be at least a little bit excited for.
That's what this season is all about, isn't it? Looking for things to be excited for.
Let's go. At least we got something. At least we got some positivity to cap off the episode with. Sorry we got bogged down by some of these questions. We're going back and forth, and we're coming up on an hour here on this episode. So tomorrow we will preview the Nuggets and the Bulls, and then we'll get to all the voicemails. We'll get to all of the other text messages that we did not get to today.
Voicemails. Hard to get to all of them in one episode. Shout out to everybody who uses our voicemail and text line. You guys are the best.
It really is. And honestly, we don't want to just skip through all of your questions in 30 seconds and just blow past them. We actually want to spend some time because you guys give us some effort in actually giving us questions or taking the time to drop us a voicemail. So we want to give it back to you guys and spend some quality time on answering your question and being thorough with it. So continue to do that. 331-979-1369. We already have a bunch of voicemails stacked up for tomorrow's episode, so we will do that. I promise you, tomorrow's episode, along with a preview of the Nuggets and the Bulls tomorrow to finish up this dreadful West Coast trip. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.